Okay. Can somebody ping me online if you can hear me? Excellent. Thank you, Bill. We'll give the courteous 5 minutes, but since there are quite a few of you already here or online, I thought I would do a little catch up. Several of you have asked for the one-on-one course video, and unfortunately, Windows 10 ate it. So there was a bug in Windows 10, and it recorded the audio, but just a black screen for the video feed. So that was no good. We might re-host and re-record that one. But for the five minutes, while people are still trailing in, I thought I would go over the prerequisites for this course. And so let's find out if anybody finds it useful. Who here? I guess by raise of hands, who has used Git before? Just about everyone. Okay. Now keep your hands up if you have used it for more than 6 months. Okay, we have two hands in the room. Okay, thanks. That. So I've been using it since we halfway through Dev 10, if not longer than that. Back when they had that TFS blackout for like 10 days, because they upgraded the server and something went horribly wrong, and then something else went horribly wrong, and I don't know how many cascaded on, but nobody could check in for like a week or 10 days or something like that. I actually had a Git bridge set up, so I was checking in quite happily, and when TFS came back online, I just synchronized everything into TFS. So I had like 20 change sets in a row or something. So, yes, I've been doing this for a while. That said, there are certainly things in the Pro Git book, which I highly recommend, that I'm still reading and studying and learning from. But yeah, I am hoping that I can share with you the more useful tricks of the trade early on. So what this list on the right that you see here is actually my punch list for things to cover in the last session. So with the next few minutes, I'll try to run through it as fast as I can, just so that those of you who missed the previous session or have very little experience with Git knows what I'm talking about. A branch in Git is very much like a branch in TFS, except that in TFS, branches have a very strictly hierarchical relationship. In Git, it's laissez-faire. You can branch anywhere and you can merge anywhere. Other than that, they're very similar. And in Git, branching is an order one operation. It's instantaneous, literally. It creates a file on disk that's about 40 characters long. That's what a branch is. In TFS, it scales with the size of the repo, so branching in TFS can take a very long time. Head is where you are. In TFS, if you sync to latest version, your head is at tip, to use a Git term. In Git, you don't sync to latest version, you check out a commit. That's sort of like syncing to a particular change set. You check out a commit. So it's not TFS checkout where you actually are telling TFS, I'm intending to make a change to this file. Git checkout is, I just want to look at the source code for a particular version. And the last place you checked out is where head is. Remote is sort of like the server. There doesn't have to be a server, and there can actually be many servers. In TFS, when you enlist, you have a very strict one-to-one relationship or one-to-many relationship where the server knows about you and is tracking you. Your workspace is a server workspace, at least in those cases. In Git, the server does not know about you. You open up a connection with the server to push or pull changes, but other than that, the server doesn't even know you exist. And you can have many remotes so you can share with your buddy if the server's down. We talk about checkout. Commit is, change set. Fetch and push. We will cover. We'll review a little bit of that in the course of today. But suffice to say, fetch is how you establish a connection with the server just long enough to get the latest changes down to the client. Because again, there's Git is a distributed version control system. So unlike TFS, where the server knows all the history and you have to go ask the server for each piece as you want it. Git, the entire history, all branches, all tags, every single file is on your computer in a compressed format. So you can actually check out and do all this stuff all locally. And the way you update your database with the latest change that your teammates have checked in is through a fetch. Push is how you submit your changes up to the server so that your teammates can then fetch them down. Pull request is the code flow equivalent in Git. Yes.
So I'm sure I'm wrong, but I thought when you did a pull, you only pulled the one branch name. Do you find the pull and everything?
Okay. So I'm going to repeat your question because I really got nailed for that last time because the microphone is right here. The question was, when you pull, do you just pull the one branch or do you pull them all? And the answer is yes and no. Pull it, and we can, we'll actually go into that. Well, that's actually on the agenda for 201. Good question, though. So in a pull request, you actually submit your changes to the server in a branch of your own, and then you start this workflow where other people can review the changes between the branch you were working on and the branch you intended the changes to go into. They can make comments. You can make additional changes. And we'll not go into that further. Forking is how, in the distributed world, I can make changes to your repo without you even saying I can make changes. Because if I can download your repo, I can make changes all I want in my local database, and I might not be able to push back to you without you giving me push permission, but I can at least have my own history and my own branches, and maybe I never want to push to you again anyway. And we are we're 5 minutes into it, so I think we'll skip down. But again, if there's sufficient, if you're interested in the 201 session, the 101 session after this one, to kind of fill in the blanks, just shoot me a private email, and I will. If I get more than 12 of those or something, I'll rehost the 101 session and I'll record it this time. Okay, this is the opening slide. It's the only slide. Yay. This is a very, very interactive session. I didn't think slides were going to do it. The thing is, Git is very, very well documented. There's a pro Git book. We'll go into that in a moment. It's excellent. There was no reason to prepare additional materials. I'll point you to the materials that other people, much more inclined in writing and drawing nice, pretty pictures, have produced so that you can find those. This is the second or third, how you count them, what we're loosely calling the VS IDE platform talks. And we're going to start storing the slides and the videos here. They're also going to be on /academy. And this one might even land on Channel 9. I heard somebody who was interested in uploading the video there. This is probably a series. We'll probably even create a distribution list that you can subscribe to. I'll send all the details as we get them to the people who attended this meeting. Yes. Yes.
Is it possible for you to share this meeting
after? Yes, we will. Yeah. It'll take a couple hours for Expression to encode the video, but I'll send you the link to the appointment invite shortly, probably this afternoon. Okay, so one thing that we skipped over yesterday or last time, we talked about specifically CoreFX, which is a really big deal. A lot of customers, I think it's trending at, 12 or 13 on GitHub now. Matt, do you know? Okay. Right. Sorry, it's a bit dark out there. But as you're interacting, if you've got source code on GitHub, if you're working on a team where there's code out there, one important thing, at least sometimes, at least for me anyway, socially, we should be treating external folks and internal folks fairly equally, from what I understand, at least from the CoreFX. How they're trying to set it up. But I still find it sometimes useful to know who I'm talking to. And since I don't know everybody who works at Microsoft or in the .NET team, if you're looking, for example, at the CoreFX repo and you're looking at pull requests or issues or whatever, anybody can file them. They look all the same. But if you go click on, if I want to know who Maxwell is and see if he's a Microsoft employee by chance, I can look at this and click on his picture. And I don't see Microsoft listed here. And it turns out that that's not just a field that anybody can fill in and fool you. If I go up here and change it to my own name, it says Microsoft there with the little multi-person icon there. I'm going to zoom in. Whew, that's a little too close. That's an organization that Microsoft has set up, and you have to have two-factor authentication on your GitHub account in order to become a member. So if you have a GitHub account and Microsoft doesn't show up for you, email the NetOSS alias maybe to get instructions. There are instructions for how to go through that process. There's not only just to get the Microsoft tag, but I guess there's some other things that we'd like you to do so that Microsoft has one face going forward. But that's how you can recognize a Microsoft individual and feel confident that that's really who they are. All right. So another thing that was brought up at the 101 meeting, but we didn't have time to cover, was PoshGit. So In Git, I mean, it was written originally in Linux. You can do everything from the command line. Things that are in VS, you can do a lot of the common workflows in VS, but not everything. And so you might find yourself at the command line a lot. And if you're in the command line, it's really nice to use PostgreSQL. I mean, a lot of you have customized your Razzle command lines, for example, so that it shows you more than just the current directory. It's PostgreSQL is like that for PowerShell. So you can see I'm in a Git repo right now, and so in addition to the directory, it's telling me that I've got the master branch checked out. That's what I'm looking at. And it's telling me an idea of what kinds of changes I've made in my repo so far. I shouldn't select that because it makes it harder to read. So if I switch to the parent directory, it goes away because it's not a Git repo down there. If I go to this other directory, you can see I'm in the fix-up branch. And just to demonstrate and to review, remember, the whole repo is local on my computer because it's a distributed version control system. So I can check out master. There was no server communication there. And by checkout, I wasn't saying that I was going to change master. I'm just switching where head is from one branch to another. And it was very fast and all local. So that's what that's all about. Let me switch back to fix it later. But PostgreSQL is cool. So honestly, when I want to install it on a computer, this is how I do it. Because the link is not easy to remember. I just say PostgreSQL. Oops, that's pushgit. And then I look for Phil Hacked because he's got the blog with the magic string. I come down here, I select, I paste it into PowerShell, and it all happens automatically, and suddenly you've got PostgreSQL. The other thing that you need, at least I find very, very useful, is to make PowerShell act like a developer command prompt for VS so that MS Build and all these other instructions are just on your path. I will send out a link to the two scripts that I have, but this is basically what it looks like. Can I zoom in? Basically, PowerShell, if you run a batch script in PowerShell, it doesn't save the environment variables. The batch script will happily set all the environment variables, and the command shell closes, and PowerShell doesn't inherit any of those environment variables, so it's useless. So this little script will actually run the batch script and then scrape out the command environment for all your environment variables and bring it back into PowerShell so that you in PowerShell you can run MS Build, which is of course very useful. And feel free to jump in with questions if you want. I'll repeat them, but I certainly accept interruptions. And I don't see any questions online either. So let's move on.
Andrew, you might cover the GitHub for Windows. Also has an open in PowerShell prompt that pre-configures
for you. Ooh, thank you. You know, it's been a long time since I've used Git for Windows. I don't think I have it installed on this computer, unfortunately. But that's a very good. Okay, so just to repeat it for the people online. Kevin just suggested that GitHub for Windows, or so you can go to github.com/windows. I think is where
Windows
it's at.
GitHub.com.
Windows.github.com. Thank you. They've got a pretty good shell, nice GUI for manipulating Git as well. And so, yeah, apparently they've got a PowerShell invoking script, which has a lot of cool stuff on there.
That's another option. I wrote a little environment, kind of tiny, that I called FXKit for now. It's on. They shared out.
That's
it
right.
It will give you PowerShell and VS command prompt, a bunch of things by default. It's a one-click install, and it's all X copy up to your box. You can deploy it like on a basic machine. It doesn't pull anything from the internet. There's no install steps. So I've been trying to maintain it for myself for a while, so I just started to package it together. Right now it does have some command kind of specifics, but I was hoping to get it out there. So
cool.
You can use it elsewhere. So I have the link on the OneNote. I'll send you the link to it too.
Great. I'll when I reply all with the video, I'll wait for your link and I'll include that as well. So where to find help outside this meeting? Good technique as well, of course. So there's at least three different ways. When you use a Git command and you want to know how it works, dash H gives you it's a little bit more than minimal. It gives you command syntax help, but it's relatively terse. If you go dash dash help, it brings up an HTML page. Much easier to parse, much, much, much more information there. So just be aware that there's two different modes there. And then, again, I never remember this link. Just do a Bing search for Pro Git Book, and it'll come right up. This is an absolutely phenomenal resource. Don't let the pro in the pro git title scare you, this takes you from the very beginning, teaches you the Git basics. I mean, if you wanted to make up for the 101 course, chapters 1 and 2 and maybe part into 3 is what we've basically covered. But it's absolutely phenomenal. In fact, I will be using some of the graphics here, I think, during the presentation. Okay, rename files and directories. In TFS, this is fraught with hazards. If you wanted to do some serious refactoring of your code, if you renamed I can't remember which order works. If you rename files and then you rename the containing directories, I think that fails. But if you rename the directories first and then rename the files, that works. I don't know. TFS, you have to tell TFS that you're doing a rename. And if you're doing some heavy refactoring, that can be tedious and sometimes even break, and you have to actually break up your refactoring into multiple change sets just so TFS can track what's going on. So just so you know, in Git, you don't have to worry about that at all. The way it tracks your files is entirely different. Just kind of like the server isn't tracking you as it is in TFS, Git doesn't have to track you either. You just make whatever changes to the file system you want. You can rename a file, rename a directory, you can copy the file, and it'll recognize that the file effectively sort of branched. It tracks the history of that file across two files. If you rename a directory, you rename a folder, it'll automatically notice that this was a rename. This can be interesting. It doesn't have to recognize it as a rename when you check in. It will usually tell you, depending on the tool you're using, it might actually go and proactively figure that out. But it actually can gain insight after the check-in that this was actually a rename, which is one of the reasons why the Git tools are so fast. It's very, very cheap and quick to make any operation, and it's looking at history where some of that work happens, and it's still really fast. Yes?
In my experience, though, because it is sort of heuristic-based, so if you rename and edit, like it will mostly work, but like certain changes you have to be a little bit careful. Like some changes you might rename and then like change every single line to just like maybe just because you moved it over, so you want to add dot dots everywhere, and it might throw off the oh this looks like a different file kind of a
right.
So in those instances, if you haven't generally like if you're just gonna change one line, it's fine. But if you feel like you're gonna do like a search and replace after renaming it, I personally suggest committing. Like it just gives it a little bit more help to just be like to see that blob that's exactly the same as the other one before you go and like search and replace inside the file, because that you might end up doing enough damage to the file that it's sort of like whatever, this could just as easily be another file.
Right.
That's generally a good idea anyway. Yeah. You want to take the non-semantic things, you get them out of the way, and commit.
Yeah.
And then that way, if shit happens, you don't have to go back to the very beginning.
Yeah, makes the code review easier too. Yeah. So for people online, Nick's point was and to kind of explain more of the theory behind it, when Git recognizes a rename, it does it through a threshold of hey, these files are have different names, but their content is very, very similar, and one was deleted and one was added in the same commit. So the odds of it being a rename is very high. But that's a threshold that you can actually set. 70% similar. Probably a rename. But remember, the fact that it was a rename was not recorded when you committed, which means you can control that threshold, what constitutes a rename, for any history you want to look at. Say, hey, consider 50% or better as a rename. And then you go look at history, and you've got renames showing up. It's not something, oh, I have to go recommit because the threshold was too low. So good point, Nick. Thank you. Okay, what have we got left? Okay, mind your write space. Okay, so we actually just covered this. Just like in TFS, don't make white space changes amidst all of your code changes. Git in particular, some of its tools are really picky about trailing white space on an individual line. So if you've got – and this is really easy to do in VS. If you're changing code around, you hit delete to delete a line, you might end up with 15 spaces at the end of a line and not even know it unless you've got visible white space turned on. Some Git tools will show this really big red block where your trailing spaces are and say, hey, this is nastiness, you should clean this up. So if you want to be paranoid or obsessive compulsive like me and clean that up, format document command in VS will automatically clean that up for you in most cases unless it's a comment. But just be mindful of that. Also, Git tools seem to be unique in the sense that they really like to have a trailing new line at the file. So if you've got a script that's three lines long, and you've got two new lines, and then the last line ends the file instead of a new line that gives you a blank line at the bottom, some Git tools will also fritz out at you saying, hey, you're missing your new line at the end. And I think that's because some tools just will malfunction if you've got files without new lines. Again, you know, if you're obsessive compulsive, you can put those in. I do try to. But if you're looking at a code review or something and it says, you see that little flag saying no new line, that's what it means. It likes to see a new line. Lastly, to kind of close some gaps from the 101 session, sync versus fetch, pull, and push, to an earlier question. So in fetch, let's switch to a repo where I can actually do this. Okay. So here's the .NET Core FX repo. I have not actually done anything with this for a while, several days, and on Core FX's schedule, that's a long, long time. So here is history, last time I fetched. So you can see here's my master branch. Here's upstream I'm sorry, you can't really see that, can you? I wonder if you can make this bigger. Anybody know? Thank you. I hope that fixes everything. Oh, yay, that's better. Forget the text on the bottom. Okay, so we've got my master branch, which is tracking the upstream branch, upstream master, which is the actual official repository. But this, according to this, hasn't been checked in since 12.23, which surely is not right. So let me do a git fetch. Now, what a git fetch does is it goes, talks to the server, says git fetch upstream, excuse me. It talks to the server and says, give me all the latest things from the database. It's not changing what I'm looking at all. This is not a tfget. Tfget brings down the snapshot of the latest changes to your source code. It changes your source code, and then that's all you've got is the latest version of the source code on your computer. This didn't change my source code a bit. I'm still on the branch that I was on. But it did bring down the updates to the database so that I have not only everything I had before, but I have all the history that's happened since December 23rd. And now if I go back over here and hit refresh, you can see a whole – wow, okay. Well, here's upstream master way over here, January 19th. So there's a ton of history here. You can see my master branch, which was in sync with upstream master, is no longer in sync. It's still way, way, way back on December 23rd. That was 101's topic, so we're not going to take time to go into that. But just, you know, so fetch doesn't change your source code. It just updates your database with respect to some remote. Yes.
How do you know it's not in sync? Because there's not a line between dots.
How do I know that my branch is not in sync with theirs?
Yeah.
Because all I see is upstream master. I don't see master next to it. So if I go and say, well, where's my master? I click here. My master's still way down here on December 23rd. So I can bring that up. Let me check out master. There. Now I've switched to my master branch. If I refresh over here, you're going to see master become bold, and this blue dot is going to become yellow. The yellow dot is because that's where head is. The bold means I have checked out a branch, and we're going to go into that in a moment. But it's still not where I want master to be. I want it to be in sync with the upstream. So I'm going to git merge upstream master.
Did you install git k or whatever that command was?
Yeah, I highly recommend you install msysgit, which actually is the same. It's tools that if you go to Visual Studio and Team Explorer, if you go to settings or something, it'll actually let you install the git command line tools. That's msysgit, except I think we built it ourselves, but it's effectively the same thing. Yes. Yeah. Now, I don't know if they put it on the path by default. When you install msysgit, they default to putting it on your path, which is really useful. Git k is my personal favorite tool for looking at Git history because it actually shows the branch history so you can see where the commits evolved, and yet it still shows it in a chronological. I don't know how to explain the order when branches merge in interesting ways. But now if I hit refresh, there's master next to upstream master, which is where we like to see it. And again, we didn't really cover merging last time, but let's talk about detached heads for a moment. So again, the yellow dot means that's where head is. That's what I'm looking at in my source tree. The branch being bolded means that's what's checked out. You can also see that down here with poshgit. Master is checked out, right? Now, unlike TFS, which uses change set numbers, Git uses hashes of the commits. So here is effectively the change set number of that particular commit. I'm going to copy, and you never have to actually throw these entire things around. You can just grab the first several characters because Git will figure out the rest. I'm going to grab the several characters, and I'm going to check out the commit. I'm already there, right? That's where head is. But I'm going to check it out anyway. Okay, so it's warning me now. You are in a detached head. That means it, now let's illustrate this by refreshing this view. I see the yellow dot is still there. That's still where head is. That's still the source code I'm looking at. But the branch is no longer bold. What does that mean? Okay, let's talk about that. Let's actually go back to check out the branch again. So now it's bold again. You can see master's here. I'm going to make a change. Foo text. Presentation. Now PowerShell is telling me, or PoshGit is telling me I've got some changes there, so I'm going to go ahead and add that. Git commit message presentation. Okay.
There's a new file that decided to tell you that you could add it or something?
In Git, you add any change you make, not just new files. It will until you tell Git to ignore it. There's a git ignore file at the base of your repository that you can put there, and that gives the file pattern of, hey, ignore the .temp files, ignore the .vi files, or whatever it is you want to ignore. So most Git repos that are already present that you'll enlist in will already have that, and it'll already ignore those things.
I had a comment.
Yeah.
I usually don't do the add. I do commit-a. And if I have random turd files in the directory, it ignores them unless the database is tracked.
That's right.
So you can have little random output files and commit-a, and it only commits stuff that's
changed. And in fact, I wouldn't recommend or expect most of your commits to be at the command line. I don't even do most of mine at the command line. I'll either do it in VS with Team Explorer, or I'll use Git GUI, which is a bit more powerful. So you can see there's the foo.txt that I added. It's describing. And look, it's screaming at me. No new line at the end of the file. Who caught that I didn't put the new line at the end of the file? I forgot that. Anyway, so now let me refresh this view and see what happened here. So we've got upstream master, which it's where we left it before. This is what the server thinks is master, but I've added a commit to master. And because I had this is the thing about the detached heads versus branches, and this is important or else you'll find that your work is missing if you ever actually find yourself in a detached head situation. Because my branch was checked out, when I committed, the branch was moved with it. The new commit that I created automatically advanced the branch tag forward. So let's try that again, but do it a different way. Let's go back to this original upstream master commit. I'm going to check that back out. So notice there's not going to be a foo.txt file there, right? Let me illustrate. Okay, so see yellow dot, this is where I'm at. And nothing's bold. And over here, PoshGit is telling me I've checked out a commit directly. Usually not a good state you want to be in. You don't want to be in a detached head because this can happen. So now, bar.txt, hello, include the new line this time. bar.txt, git commit, added bar. There, I've committed it. You notice the commit that I'm on has changed. My head has moved forward. If I did git log, there it is, added bar, there's my commit. But if I go over here and refresh, nothing's changed, except that the yellow dot is no longer yellow, it's blue, because that's not where head is. This is not where you want. This is why Git will allow you to make any commits you want, often never, never land, and unless there's a branch or a tag on that commit, you may lose track of it, because unless you have a photographic memory and can remember this commit ID, nobody else will, you know, it's just trouble. We'll save more discussion on why you would actually want a detached head for a 301 course, which, you know, by the time you walk out of those, you'll know more than you ever wanted to know. But for now, let's get back. Well, I'll show you how to recover in case somebody, you know, finds themselves in a situation and finds this video. Just name it. Git branch recover. And now if you refresh, there's recover. But I'm still detached. I created a branch on that commit, but I haven't actually checked out that branch. So let's go fix that too. Recover. There. And this over here is now bold. So that's your detached head. Want either of these. Yeah, go ahead.
What's the typical way you get into that situation?
When you're looking at history closely, you'll often be in that situation. So let's say you want to study this particular change. You want to basically do a TF get for a particular timestamp. That's effectively like a detached head. So I'll say, well, I want to look at this. So I'm going to go grab this commit ID and go check that out. I'm now on the detached head, which if I'm not planning on making changes and just studying, that's fine. But don't forget, and that's why it's screaming at you saying, hey, watch out, you know, this you can lose work this way. Now, on the topic of losing, yes?
Could you say another reason why you might want to do this, and maybe this goes into Andrew's 301 thing, is if you make a bunch of commits and you decide, hey, I didn't want to do this approach, I wanted to try something different, you might reset yourself back to that commit and then go create a new branch, like make a new commit and then name that and then start tracking that branch so you can do a different set of work in a different branch. But you can go create those branches after the fact.
Yep. And just to illustrate from another angle, commits are commits are commits in Git. Every commit is a commit is the same. This commit is not any more special than this one or this one or this one. Like, they're all just commits. And a commit can belong to any number of branches. But it's not that it really belongs to the branch. Git has a singly linked list of each commit. This commit goes to the commit before it, goes to the commit. Every commit points to the commit that preceded it. And in a case of a merge, it points to multiple preceding commits. And so a branch is literally just a label that moves forward with the latest commit number. I mean, if you want to see what a branch is, here it is. Git refs heads. Let's list it. There are my three branches, master, recover. And you see how big they are? Now I can just delete it, just to prove the point, recover. I don't like the recover branch. That was junk anyway. Now if I refresh, it's gone. Yes?
So does that mean there's this orphan commit out in La La Land you can never get back?
Oh. It does mean that there's a commit off in La La Land, but actually you can get it back. Actually, for some months, there's some the default timeout is like 2 months or something very, very long in Git before it starts pruning out commits that have no heads or have no labels attached to them. So for a long, let's say, so you make this mistake, right? This is what's going to get your next promotion, and you lost it, right? So it's gone. Oh my gosh, and you're wondering, how do I get this commit back? And you're on master now, and you're wondering what that commit was. Reflog. So what happens is every time you check out a new commit or make a commit, Git actually records where head has been forever. Very, very cool tool. If I type git reflog, there it is. And it even explains what you did at the time to get head to that point. Head is now here. I'm moving from here to, and you know, I guess I should expand this window. Here to master, moving from recover to, you know, so you go along and say, oh my gosh, this is it, this is the one, you know, that's the one I lost. Or you could go over here, you know, whatever. So you go over here, you've now got the commit ID, you go check it out. Even though I deleted the branch label, the commit is still there, and now you can go and save yourself and get that promotion.
Sorry, one more. So when you committed bar into that La La Land space, did Git effectively create a branch? Because there was already a following commit.
Bar was the second one I did, right? Yeah. So I committed that before I created a branch for it. So no, there was no branch. There was just a new commit on a detached head.
So at one point in time, there's commit C.
Yep.
And all this development occurred. You went back in time and checked out C. And then you committed a new change.
Yep.
So that must have created a branch.
Well, logically, in the commit history, yes, it looks like a branch. But it wasn't a branch with a name. It was a so you could think of it as an anonymous branch, which is not something you want to keep around for very long. Sorry, what?
They said it will eventually clean.
Yes, it will. Yeah. Yes, it will. And even the server, it depends on the server policy, I'm sure. But you can push commit IDs eventually. Like if you delete a branch from the server, all those commits are still up there on the server for some period of time as well. So you can recover that way too, potentially. But I wouldn't, you know, don't count on it. These are rescue approaches. And by the way, so I've been moving master. All these changes have not been affecting the server in any way because it's all distributed. So until I do a git push, the server never sees this stuff. In this case, I want to put master back where it was. So I'm going to git checkout master. And I'm going to reset hard origin master, or rather upstream master. And I think we covered that in 101, so we won't cover that here. But suffice it to say, that moved my master branch back to upstream master branch. And this is now an orphaned commit, and when I hit Shift F5, it's as good as gone, unless I wanted to git reflog again. But I didn't want that commit anyway. So I'm going to run through a couple of... Yes.
That one's still around for the 2 months, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I don't. If we go git reflog, so we just, you know, that was probably this one. If we go to git or dir git objects, this is where all the objects are kept. This database is just a file system thing, and that commit started with a 1.5, so probably E924. There it is. Zipped. Otherwise, you'd see a commit-looking thing that described a new file and all that other stuff. So it's all there still in my object database until I do a very aggressive clean command, or the timeout comes out and starts cleaning up its own stuff and gets rid of all this dead stuff.
Andrew?
Yes?
Is there a viewer? You just mentioned that gzip helps you look at this.
Yes.
A way you might want to look at it.
Yeah, let's try git show. There it is. Remember, this was the commit hash, right? It was the commit ID. So what you're looking at is the commit. This is how Git sees a commit. There's the details about it. It's all just text. There's no rich data in this. It's just text. And then it says, I added this file. And actually, if you look at it, this is actually a little higher level than I was expecting because I don't use Git show very much. This very object probably doesn't actually include this data. The commit ID points to a tree, which is basically your file system in a snapshot form. And then the tree will say, hey, there's this file called foo.txt, and here's the hash of that content of the file. And because everything's hash-based and it's an object database where the objects are strictly named to be the hash of their content, that means if you have a 50-kilobyte file that appears in 5,000 places in your Git repo, you're only storing that file once. It's taking very, very little memory. Or space in your database. Okay, some more practical stuff, and we've really got to run through this. Let's talk about cherry picking. So let's simulate. Okay, well, this is good. This is good. So here's a V1, right? CoreFX just branched off of their V1 stuff. And ideally, the way merging branches or the branch workflows – let me – this is a good time to bring this up, branching workflows. So this doesn't actually illustrate release branches. This is development branches. But CoreFX has master, and then just imagine this is 1.0 branch. So typically, master will have more commits than 1.0 will have. If you're making a change that should go into 1.0 and master, make the change in 1.0. And then 1.0 will merge into master periodically, so your change will eventually get into master. But the idea is check into the oldest release branch that your fix should go into. Now, sometimes you don't know that your fix is actually a candidate for inclusion in 1.0, so let's play that out. Here I am in master. Add my cool feature there, folks. Create a commit based on that. Added cool feature. So there it is in master. Well, let's suppose I push that. Everybody reviews it and they say, hey, this is pretty cool. But why didn't you do it in 1.0? This feature deserves to be in 1.0. We should have put it there. Or maybe it's a hot fix. It was worthy of being a hot fix to 1.0. How do you get it? Once you've done it on top of master, how do you get into 1.0? So this is how you do it. First of all, similar to TFS, you can only change a branch that you currently have checked out. And so if you look at this problem of It's in master. I want it to be in 1.0. The thing to change is 1.0. So you got to check out 1.0. So now I've checked out 1.0. I actually had never checked out 1.0 before, and so the later version of the Git tools are smart enough to say, hey, if I don't have a branch, go look at my remotes, and if one of the remote servers has a branch with that name, go ahead and actually create a local branch based on that. And we talked about remote versus local branches and why in the world those are two different things in the last one, so we'll have to catch up on that one later if that didn't make sense. But here's 1.0. I want added cool feature to be in 1.0. So if I refresh here again, Yeah, it did. Sometimes I could recover with a refresh, but not that time. Okay, so here's 1.0. I want to go snag this commit from master and put it on 1.0. Now, if you're using Git K, you just right-click on the commit and say cherry pick. Now it's on 1.0. That was all local. I still haven't pushed. If you went on GitHub now and looked at CoreFX, none of these commits would be there. In Git, you can branch, you can cherry pick, you can merge, you can do all these operations completely in isolation and push when you're ready. So here's added cool. I did not take it off of master because rewriting history, like removing something from a branch that used to be there, is a very invasive surgical operation you have to be very intentional about and usually shouldn't do. So cherry pick just copies the commit. It has a new commit ID, 7564, and this was 2B55F. Why? Because these are unique. This is a different commit than this one. They go to two different branches that have forked already. They were actually made at different times, even though it was a copy of one. But the commits are essentially unique. But Git, when it did that, it was very smart about figuring out the diff and effectively re-merging the commit into the new branch.
But if two users branch with the same name?
That's not a problem. Now, if they're both sharing a remote or a server, then the server will have to decide which branch is the one that the server is. Like the first person who creates a branch and pushes, that will be the branch. And if somebody else then tries to push a branch with the same name, the server's going to reject it saying, this branch isn't an advancement of the branch I already have. It's not a fast-forward merge is what we call it. Therefore, I'm going to reject this. You can override that, but we're not even going to cover that because that's usually not a good idea. So anyway, that's cherry pick. Okay, that's fine for one commit. What if you've got a whole series of commits? Let's actually back that out. Reset hard upstream v1. So if I refresh, there we go. I just orphaned that commit again. And let's make a couple more commits to master. My cool feature is even cooler now. All right. So it's not a new file, is it? But I'm going to call it git add. And again, in Team Explorer, if you were using this in Visual Studio, which you probably will usually do, this is all taken care of for you. But in Git, on the command line, the way it works is you're adding a change to source control. Even though it's not a new file, it's a new snapshot of a file. So I'm going to git add my new cool feature. And so now it's not red. It's not yelling at me. It's nice and green saying, hey, I'm ready to commit this. So commit added more stuff. There we go. Now you can imagine this is 20 commits if you want. And if I realize this before I've even pushed, but I realize, oh shoot, I shouldn't have been doing this on master. I should have been doing this on the v1.0 branch. That's what rebase is for. You could cherry pick individual commits all the way up, but that's tedious. So let's go back to the 1.0 branch. I don't think that matters, actually. Let's do git rebase. I want to rebase, and I never can quite remember what the syntax is for this. This is the more advanced rebase. Rebase from, I think, well, we'll see if this works. Now, the worst you can do is have to revert your ref log or fix one branch. It's the worst you can do, and it can't be server. So you're free to do whatever you want and learn about this. But I'm going to say rebase everything from master to upstream master, which is these two commits, onto v1.0.
Is there like an undo for that?
No. You have to know how to fix it up yourself. Sometimes I've gotten myself into such a pickle that I just reclone the repository. I just delete my entire directory and reclone, which always works, but you might leave some stuff behind. So, all right, so it says it worked. I have no idea whether it did what I wanted it to do, so I'm going to refresh.
But didn't you want to change the 1.0 branch?
I did. That's why I said on to v1.0.
So that's an acceptance of the fact that you only changed the current branch?
That was the idea. However, I get the feeling that it didn't do what I thought it was going to do, so maybe that's part of it. Yeah, nothing happened. I think I'm on a detached head. Go figure. Let's try something else. Let me first of all, I don't think it matters what I'm checked out on, though. On to v1.0, I'm going to check out, or I want to rebase master onto it, but only up to upstream master. If this doesn't work, I'll just tell you it's an exercise left to the reader, and you can go read it from the pro git book. Yeah, okay, sorry. This is one command line I didn't have prepared before the meeting. And I usually, as I say, I usually have to do at least a dash H, if not a dash dash help, to remind myself how to do the onto syntax. So there it is, and you could read more about that. But suffice to say, you can take a whole cluster of commits and move them between branches, and you typically want to do that before you push. Yes?
I don't do this because I'm too stupid, but someone asked about this undo. My understanding of Git culture is because branches are so incredibly light, people just branch all the time, multiple times a day maybe, and then you can just write branch.
Absolutely. So in TFS, branching was such a heavyweight process. It took like 2 hours to branch DevDiv once. I did it, and I brought down the whole server. And when the lab guys were like, why were you trying to branch? Whoa. We have these special tools to branch, piece at a time. And so when I was done with the branch a couple months later, I tried to delete my branch. Same problem. Also a very heavyweight operation. The lab guys came back and said, why were you trying to delete a branch? Because I'm done with it. I was using Git, right? I thought branches were supposed to be deleted when they were done. And they were like, no, just let it stagnate there. That's fine. Don't delete branches. In Git, absolutely delete your branches. That doesn't delete history. Look at all these merges that you see here. Those are all anonymous branches now. The branch label was deleted, but the history was preserved. Sorry, what?
No, if it merges into another branch, then it'll be rooted by that other branch.
But right. If you didn't root it, then it would
get rooted. Right. But typically what happens is
I just have like a nice checkpoint place saying, well, this is where I am, and then do some stuff and then go back to the checkpoint.
Yes.
And anytime you want to do that, create a branch where you are, don't check it out, continue to work, and then you can just reset by going back to that branch.
So that's kind of what I mean by undo. But maybe checkpoint it so that I can go back.
Yes, yes. So yes, because everything's local, you can do a whole bunch of stuff and use that as your undo workflow. Sorry. I thought you meant like if I screwed up Git history really, really bad by using some command that did the wrong thing, there's not an undo for that. And in TFS, you have a shelf set. In Git, you have a stash. So if you're halfway done with the change and you're not ready to commit it, but you just need to check out another branch and go check something out because you're getting randomized at work, you can stash. But we covered that last session, so we'll save time because we got 12 minutes left. Yes?
Since the branch is very lightweight and we use a new branch and discard it, will it lead to one of the branch names, please?
Not at all, because once you delete the branch, it's freed for somebody else to reuse. And the reason you create branches all the time, even for a simple bug fix, is because that's what allows you to start the pull request flow. You push your branch up, you don't push master, you push another branch with your changes on it, and then you go to the website and say start new pull request, and you say I want to merge my cool fix or my cool feature into master, and people can review it, and then it becomes a merge from your branch into the other one. And the branch might only have one commit on it, but that's okay. Because it's cheap. Oh, and to follow up on the pull, so we talked about fetch and how that brings history down. And then you saw me do a git merge upstream master to sync my master up to upstream master. Pull does those two things. It fetches, and then it merges the tracking branch into my current branch. it does not merge all my other branches into their tracking branches, which is what you were getting at. So if I've got if CoreFX has master and v1.0 and I do a git pull, it will fetch and I'll get updates for all the branches for the remote names. But my local branches will not have been synced to tip on those branches unless I did a git pull, and it would only happen to that one branch. So you could git pull on each one of your branches if you wanted to. And it would get fetch every time, and it would be kind of redundant. But you can do that. In Team Explorer, there's also a – so in Team Explorer, they expose fetch and pull, which have those two behaviors. They also have a sync button, which is the biggest one. Sync does two things. It does a pull followed immediately by a push. So if you actually have commits locally that you want to push up, TFS, if you do a check-in, TFS will just take it. You might have a source code that's a week old, and if you do a TF check-in, TFS has no problem creating a new change set for you as long as the files you happen to have changed haven't changed more recently. Git does not let you push if you were not if you're not synced to tip. So that's why the sync button in Team Explorer is so big for Git users, because it's kind of the new check-in button. Before you can push, you have to pull. And then you can push. So sync just does fetch, merge, and push all in one. Okay, let's see what we prioritize here. Okay, I'll show you. I was going to show you Git log. I kind of showed you Git log. There's a whole bunch of amazing things you can do with Git log, customizing formatting and everything, but most of it you probably don't care about. The interesting things that I usually use for viewing history is Git K or Team Explorer's View History View. But I usually use Git K because it shows me branches. Git diff is just the command line, hey, what's the difference between V1 and master? And it'll show me all the diffs between them. It's very, very powerful. You can take any two commits in history across branches or whatever and say, show me the difference between these two. It'll show you line by line things. You can also say git log and say, what has this will tell me what's happened in master that is not in V1. And perhaps an even more preferred syntax. This will just show me all the commits that ever were included in V1. And then you can use this syntax as well and say, but not in master. So these are the commits that are in V1 that have not merged to master yet. It could be interesting. So now we're going to two powerful, powerful things that you're going to love. Let's go into demo bisect. Who here has heard of Git bisect? Okay. It's awesome, awesome stuff. So here's my demo here. I have a very, very simple project, and it's supposed to always have passing tests. We like passing tests, right? We're test-driven development, and tests are always passing or they're disabled. But somebody checked into something that would break the test, and I don't know who or why or when it happened. Git bisect will take the tedium out of this. So here's the let me bring up the history for this. It's a short history, right? I made this up last night. But I don't know which one of these broke the test. So what I can do is git bisect start. Now, I could just do it a couple of other commands too, but the easiest way is git bisect start, and I'm going to name the commit or branch name that I know is broken, which is master. I know it's broken in master, and I know it worked back here. So if you're looking at a regression, hey, this test regressed, and it regressed between January 14th and January 15th, bisect is your friend. It'll make this really, really easy. I know it worked on this commit. So there you go. The broken one, the fault, and the working one. Now what this does is it's now going to do a binary search for you. So if I go over here and refresh, remember my head was on master. This is another detached head scenario. It picked halfway between those two. See, it's added special tags. Bisect bad. So bisect has identified that this is bad and this is good, or rather you've helped it identify that. And it says, okay, now you need to test this one. See if that works. Okay. So I actually have written a little test script. What it's going to do, if we look at it, let's go to test.bat. It will build my project and run tests. So I can run the test right here. It built. It's running the test. It's taking a long time. It's a good commit. The this what happened before the regression. So I can say git bisect, good. And now it's moved me to the next one. So let's see what happens to this yellow dot when I hit refresh. Okay, well maybe it's this one. Go test that one out so I can test that as well. Okay, that's a bad one. Git bisect bad. Okay, so now it's... Oh, and by the way, I should have called this out. It was predicting how many steps I had to take. Roughly one step left, roughly zero steps left. It's actually pretty sure it knows where it is. So if we hit refresh here, now we need to test this one. Failed, so this is a bad one. Oh, where is that bad? There we go. And at this point, git bisect is finished. It says, this commit is the first bad commit. And here's the message, and here's what changed in the file or in the directory. And if I go now that we know that this one's a bad one, I can look at the history and think, oh, that idiot, he tried to add A and B by, and he added a plus one down there. So now, this is just the beginning. Let me reset that, which should have cleared all that, I think. Let's check out master. There we go. Now we're clear. Another thing, posh git will tell you that you're in the middle of a bisecting operation. You don't want to keep using git while it's in a bisecting operation. That's not good. Git bisect start. Start this again. Now, that was cool that git helped you figure out the whole binary search thing, but we can do better. You can give it the script that I was just running. If you've got a script that returns error code, like error levels or exit codes based on whether or not it passed or not, you can just let it do its work for you. And about right now, you're reaching for your checkbooks to buy this thing at whatever price. But it's free! So.
What is git
reset again? Git reset? You saw? Well, so the command I just used was git bisect reset. Which is, hey, no more bisect. I'm done with bisect. Get out of that mode. Git reset is something else you do to clean your remove changes and things. It's a very different command. So there we go. I didn't have to do anything. I could go get my coffee or whatever it is you like to drink. For me, it would be hot chocolate. And it still found the same commit. This is freaking awesome. If we all have builds that go fast and tests that go fast, it works especially well. I just whip up that little script file. It was two lines for me. And you can whip it up. The script file actually isn't in the repo. I just created it after I identified that there would be a problem. I just thought, well, let's write a script that would identify the problem, and then I can run git bisect until it'll find it for me. And it works across branches. So if there's a whole bunch of merges and your history is really crazy, it still gets the binary search right and it'll tell you exactly the commit, not the merge commit that's not useful. It'll actually tell you the actual commit that caused the failure, which is freaking awesome. Okay, so we've got one more thing to cut. Well, we had a bunch more to cover, but we're about out of time. So there's one other thing I want to cover, which is there is a religious debate in Git. And those of you who know me, you know what I'm about to talk about. I'm not going to try to make the complete case, but I do want to show you one compelling example, since video is really the best way to do this. Rebase versus merge. So if you look at history, let's clear out this history. This is my rebase example. Okay. So here's some initial commit of a project I did, and then I added a hello world. I wonder how quickly I can edit preferences, fonts, diff display font. Let's make that really big too. Okay, that's better. So made a commit, said hello world, and then I branched off to do a bug fix, and I added the missing comma. And then I capitalized W because it's a proper noun when I'm addressing somebody, right? And then I added a question at the end, and how are you? Now, on master, somebody else managed to beat me to it, and they pushed up another change, and they changed it to hello boogeyman. which is totally legitimate. We were just, you know, there was a policy change in the team. We changed who we were addressing, and now it's Boogeyman. So that's the state of the world. This is a natural evolution of the Git repo. Now, I can merge fixup one into master, or I can rebase fixup one into master. The effect of a merge that this fork in history would then come back together. For those online, my fingers are touching. And I would have a merge conflict to resolve, wouldn't I? And in the end, this is what you'd see. Well, let's go through this. So I need to go back to master. Git merge fixup one, because I want to merge fixup one into master. And it's saying, yeah, of course I've got a merge conflict. And I really wanted to have time to explain merge tool, but I'm not going to. Look it up in the help, I guess. Or we can save it for the 301 course. But I'm going to use merge tool to help me resolve this conflict. And I have kdiff3 set up. Because normally with a conflicted file, it only shows you the left and the right. It doesn't show you the base. And sometimes the base is really useful. So I can see that hello world's what it used to be. Then one branch changed it to boogeyman. One branch changed it to comma and how are you, right? So I'm going to say I want policy. So what I'm going to do is adjust this. And how are you? And I'm going to resolve that conflict, save my changes, close. And then I'm going to go ahead and, let's see. I guess I'm all good. Yeah, it's pretty smart, isn't it? Okay, merged. There we go. Now if I look at history, this is what a merge does. Okay? That's not what we call linear history. Some people really like their linear history. So, let's play. This is good. We had one merge conflict to resolve, and history accurately shows what actually happened. These two things were developed independently, and then they came together, and a merge conflict happened, and it was resolved. You can even see the merge conflict here, right? But let's play that back a different way. Let's reset hard to this commit. Refresh that. There. We're back to where we were, right? Let's do a rebase this time. And when you're doing a rebase, you actually are changing fixup one. So what rebase is going to do is it's going to move these three commits on top of master so that you have a linear history. Okay? Let's see how that turns out for us. Git rebase master. Now if you're pre-thinking this in your head, you might begin to see the problem.
If you're starting with fixup, so that's where you're
No.
The result will be fixed up.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, thank you for correcting me. That's true. So in the rebase, remember how we talked about rebase before, although I didn't get the command line right. I'm moving all three commits on top of master, and it does it one commit at a time. And so I've got a merge conflict. Let's resolve that. Look at this. What's being resolved here? Which conflict is getting resolved? The first commit, just the first one. So I come over here, and I say, OK, I guess I need to add the comma to this one. Save, close. And then git rebase continue. Goes on to the next commit, which guess what? Another conflict. Yes. So, okay, git merge tool. I'm on two now. You know how much we love resolving conflicts. I'm so excited about doing this the second time. Coming over here. Okay, it looks like we changed things from world to boogeyman. So once again, I've got to, do the right thing there. Keep my comma, though, because that was what I was trying to keep the first time. Oh, no, it was capitalized. That one was capitalized in W. So let me go back and fix that one. Notepad. What was that file name called? The Big Boogeyman. Okay. Add console program. Rebase, continue. You tired yet? I heard a yawn. Yeah, sorry for keeping you late. I hope you're not missing a meeting. Did anybody expect the third conflict? Should have. Yeah, yeah, it happens. And how are you? Added that at the end, so go fix another one.
Note that your second commit message was capitalizing W.
Oh, I was going to.
You could have changed.
I was going to. So here we go. Wow, isn't that nice linear history? So we added a comma. That's true. So this one's changing from world to boogeyman. So we added the comma to boogeyman. We capitalized W in world, except there's no W anymore. Then we added the question. So this history doesn't exactly. First of all, it's really painful to get. And second of all, it doesn't accurately reflect the evolution of the changes. And lastly, yeah, the commit messages were wrong. And in some cases, I didn't recreate this one. But you can, even though each of these individual commits in their own histories built and might have even passed all the tests, I might have created a history in which not all the commits build or pass tests. So there's my little spiel about a real-world example of how rebase can be more painful than merge. Sorry, what?
Push like tens of commits, and you don't know what builds. You don't test them all. So like whether you rewrite it or not is kind of completely orthogonal to whether every commit builds or not, right? Like, because people push what they want. They give you, here's my commits, and we test the last one, and now we take it.
Well, so when you do when there's a merge record, you know that master always built because it had to, or for you to accept a pull request. So if the commit was in master, you don't have. You're right. You can't trust that the topic branch always built, but master always built potentially. But you lose that if you rebase. So but again, I didn't want to get bogged down in that religious argument. I just wanted to give you one real case where rebase can be painful. Yes. What?
So this might break bisect on master because now you.
Yeah, you have a whole bunch of random failures in the middle. That's true.
So. What's the big value for linear? I mean, I don't want to get into the debate, but tell me, this was the disadvantage.
It reflects what TFS customers expect. In TFS, it's always linear history.
So, but that's not a real advantage. That's I want to do it the way I did it before.
I have to understand this complicated graph. Like, a linear history seems simpler.
I think there's a gross oversimplification of this debate to be like, either you have linear history because you like refuse to accept that there are graphs,
right.
Or you like never ever rewrite anything because you know like things will planes will fall from the sky,
right.
And there's really this like in between world, which is like when I've been packing for a couple days, I may have created a bloody mess of commits, and the risk of like sort of like pushing all those commits for everyone to forever have to look through what was Guerrero doing, why did he, you know, it's all there. It's not necessarily always useful, and I certainly think that sometimes you're doing everyone a favor by like before you ever show anyone, you ever show anyone anything, of kind of telling a story that they might someday understand what, because I may not be committing.
That's not a rebase versus merge debate though. That's just clean up your history before you push, and that's a very valid use of rebase.
Just
absolutely.
Because everybody believes you should rebase on your topic branch before you push any changes, right? So you should make your topic branch.
So you should rewrite. So, but here he did rebase his topic branch, but he pushed it. He pushed it over. So you never push your commits over, but you can rewrite them.
That's what I do.
Okay. Anyway, it's the same command.
Your teams will make policies. This debate has shown up on mailing lists, and they never ever die because some people are set on one way or the other. And there's a lot of misunderstanding, like this case, where we both agree on that point. So there's a lot to agree on, but your teams will probably make decisions that you'll need to abide by if you have input. This might be a case. Now, again, it was deliberately pathological, right? I did change the same line repeatedly on purpose, but it can happen in the wild. Yes.
So this debate is great in academics, but what is our workflow convention?
Well, I'll tell you what. The tools that we have to use today. First of all, the limitations in the tools and how they show history is another reason why people like linear history, because the tools don't show nonlinear history very, very well. So it might be a temporary problem. But our tools today, VS Online, GitHub, and Visual Studio, only expose merge. You can't rebase anyway unless you use the command line. So it's not actually that much of a practical issue unless you happen to have a team of advanced programmers who are willing to rebase.
I've never seen a GUI, but still there should be a convention because we can use the command line.
The answer is that you'd use merge because that's what the tools support directly.
Well,
but also, unless you went to some trouble to enforce that you can't use merge, which would be very difficult given that's the one thing the tools provide, you're gonna get a graph.
Yeah.
And so that's the answer.
But there's a lot of pressure on VS Online to add support for automatic rebasing of pull requests. So if that happens, they're gonna run into issues like this. Yes. Yes.
Back to what I was saying, like, while cleaning up my history, I sometimes do also, like, rebase myself forward as part of my cleanup. Like, I just look like I'm about to share this, and I want to tell a story, and it turns out, like, I don't remember why, but I started this thing, like, way long ago, and now if I merged, like, four times inside this, and it's actually really small. Like, I don't want to share these merges with anybody. Like, I am going to, like, there's still a judgment. If I haven't, like, I still feel like there are just times where it's not like zero merge commits, but it's like, if you give me a change that's really small, but for whatever reason, because you did it over like 2 weeks, you have like four merges in there, and like, you're going to push all those merges up to the to the master, especially get messy, and like, it's not really helping the readers of the of the history. So
there's always judgment calls, and before you push, have your judgment calls all you want. Once after you push, rebasing can impact the whole team. Just be aware of that. And again, I'll forego making any further arguments and boring people and going beyond the scope. This is supposed to be more of an educational lecture than a religious debate. So we've pretty much covered everything I meant to. The next session, if there's sufficient interest in it, will be more geek level. Like, if you want to be the expert who your team calls and to say, hey, I just hashed my Git clone, can you help me repair and salvage my work? We can go deeply into that. Or you can just read the Pro Git book, because it's all there. So let me know if you're interested in such a session, we can schedule one. Or if you want the 101 session again, little army, and let me know you want the 101 session again, we'll record it this time. But thanks everybody for coming. I'll stay after for questions.
Is this important?
Yes.
Basically, no one whacks your PP.
Jared said he will only get involved if people waste time debating it.
Okay.
Yeah, they can. In which case, that will stop them from debating.
Which one?